It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
U.S. Defense Secretary warns of a major terrorist threat from Islamic State militants. A new prime minister for Turkey. I'm Ray Kugel reporting from Washington. U.S. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel is warning of a very dangerous threat posed by Islamic State extremists to global security. Secretary Hagel spoke in Washington Thursday about the campaign by Islamic State extremists to establish a so-called Sunni caliphate encompassing parts of a number of Middle East countries, including Syria and Iraq.
They're beyond just a terrorist group. They marry ideology, a sophistication of strategic and tactical military prowess. They are tremendously well-funded. Oh, this is beyond anything that we've seen.
Secretary Hagel said the Islamic State is better armed, trained, and bankrolled than any previous militancy. The militants have been responsible for the deaths of thousands of their insurgency in northern Iraq and Syria. Two American aid workers infected with the Ebola virus in Liberia have recovered. They've left a hospital in the southern U.S. city of Atlanta, Georgia. Kent Brantley and Nancy Reitbol were treated at Emory University Hospital with medication that included the experimental drug known as ZMapp. They were the first to receive the treatment. Doctors do not know whether it helped them recover. A tense calm, meanwhile, continues in the West Point area of Liberia's capital, Monrovia, after riot police clashed with residents Wednesday who were trying to break up a quarantine placed on the area in an attempt to contain the spread of Ebola. At least 4 people were injured. The death toll, according to the WHO, 1,350 people. This is VOA News. An Israeli airstrike in the southern Gaza Strip killed 3 senior Hamas commanders. All 3 were killed Thursday when bombs struck a 4-story house in the town of Rafah, where they had led operations against Israel for 20 years. Israeli Defense Minister Moshe Yaalon says the 3 were responsible for deadly attacks against Israel, including the killing of Israeli soldiers and the 2006 kidnapping of soldier Gilad Shalit. Turkey's ruling AK party chose Foreign Minister Ahmet Davutoğlu as the successor to Prime Minister Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who is now the president-elect. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
The Central Committee of Turkey's ruling AK party named Foreign Minister Davutoğlu as the Prime Minister, a move that will take effect later in the month. The choice was widely predicted. Announcing the decision to senior members of the party and media, Mr. Erdogan said he consulted widely before making a decision.
Yolu yolumuz açık olsun diyor. İnşallah.
What is expected of the new prime minister is to realize our dream of a new Turkey, he said, adding that Ahmet Davutoğlu's hard work and ambition influenced the decision reached on merit. He said Mr. Davutoğlu is committed to a foreign policy with a conscience, and our belief is he will continue this commitment as prime minister. Mr. Davutoğlu promised he would continue the work of Mr. Erdogan. Dorian Jones for VOA News, Istanbul.
The governor of the central U.S. state of Missouri ordered the withdrawal of the National Guard from a town rocked by almost 2 weeks of protests following the August 9 shooting death of an unarmed black teenager by a white policeman. Governor Jay Nixon said he was removing the National Guard because the situation in Ferguson greatly improved. One of the largest U.S. banks, the Bank of America, is paying a record fine of almost $17 billion because of bad housing loans it sold to investors, helping trigger the world recession. It is the biggest settlement ever between the U.S. government and a private corporation. In making the announcement Thursday, U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder said Bank of America engaged in pervasive schemes to defraud investors buying the bad loans.
These loans contained material underwriting defects. They were secured by properties with inflated appraisals.
The Bank of America penalty follows a combined $20 billion in fines already imposed on 2 other large banks, J.P. Morgan Chase and Citigroup. Russia's Food Safety Agency is conducting safety checks on McDonald's fast food restaurants nationwide after 3 of McDonald's most popular Moscow locations were ordered to close. Russian health authorities say they're looking at possible breaches of sanitation rules. Critics say they view the government action as a form of retaliation for Western economic sanctions against Moscow. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, August 22nd. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Residents of Liberia's West Point say Ebola quarantine is affecting their livelihoods.
They said they brought food for us today, and the food they brought for us, it was 300 bags of rice. We get sales soon in West Point, and they say soon that food can sell everybody.
Jatu Harris is a fish marketer in Liberia's West Point. Democratic Republic of Congo says it sends Ebola experts to Liberia. A hit song delivers Ebola messages in Liberia's capital. Civil society groups call on IGA to bring South Sudan government negotiators back to the negotiating table. And Amnesty International says Mali continues to jail former child soldiers.
They are victims. They should not be considered as perpetrators. So they should be freed. They should be helped to reinsert them in their local communities.
Salim Traore is Amnesty's Mali director, and U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder promises a fair and thorough investigation into the police shooting death of an unarmed black teenager in Ferguson, Missouri. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Some residents of Liberia's West Point say Ebola-related restrictions are becoming unbearable, and they say if the situation continues for another week, the already angry residents could get even angrier. The World Health Organization says 90% of new Ebola deaths have occurred in Liberia. President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf Wednesday announced the quarantine of West Point, a slum of the capital, Monrovia, to control the spread of the virus. But resident Jatu Harris, a fish marketer, says the restrictions are affecting their way of life. She says the government on Thursday delivered a truckload of rice for the first time since the quarantine, but it was not enough for the entire community.
And as you say, to tell a story, we are not selling in peace, and we are not even getting our money that we put in the market anymore.
So why do you think you are not able to sell your market?
Because no peace, they put running behind us. And in fact, you can't even stay in one place for even 1 or 2 minutes. If you stay in one place for 1 or 2 minutes, that probably in a pity for you.
I understand you sell fish. So that means now you are not selling enough fish to make a living.
No way. No way. We're not getting outside. Nobody coming in. We're just in the area going one place to another. Nothing we're doing. In fact, even if you won't go to go to your family, say, you set the area, you can't follow. Say, if you go, you might not come back.
If you're not making your market daily, are you getting help from the government?
No way. Today, they say they brought food for us today. And the food they brought for us, it was 300 bags of rice. And the 300 bags of rice, we get sales soon in West Point. And they say soon that food can sell everybody. 4 person on half bag of rice. And if you not get strong resistance, you can get on the land for the food. So more people didn't get food. And the rice was very rotten.
Mr. Pompon, are you on the line?
Yeah, I'm certainly there.
From the perspective of your organization, how are you experiencing this Ebola situation?
The Ebola situation is disturbing. The rights of people have been violated in terms of movement. We witnessed about 4 victims in terms of the curfew as to how the army is moving into homes and forcing people to go in before the curfew time. There is nowhere for which people have to sell. The army and the police is ensuring that nobody is gathering and no market is there. So everybody is partly into their home.
The government said it is necessary to quarantine places like West Point because it wants to control the transmission of this Ebola virus. Do you think they are doing it in the right way?
They never did it the right way because Tuesday by 1 o'clock, they closed the place on off. They aren't telling you anything.
Jatu, how do you think the situation can be made better for you who are making business and are living in West Point?
The only thing now, after the 94, still stressing and the process saying that we should bring the center in the township of West Point. Meaning I pay the public key from first because suddenly when they brought the center in West Point, they didn't tell us, and even the commission didn't even explain to all that they were bringing center in West Point. She only to all alone, only come to catch the people. But when we call our man, people started coming from all over the place, started coming taking deer valley, taking Ebola patients from all over the county and the federal district, bringing it in the township of West Point.
That was Jatu Harris, a fish marketer in Liberia's West Point. You also heard Achi Pompon, a member of Respect Incorporated, a local NGO with headquarters in West Point. The Democratic Republic of Congo says it has sent its Ebola virus experts to Liberia to help combat the disease following an official request from Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf's government. DRC Information Minister Lambert Mende tells reporter Peter Clotty the Congolese government has also begun screening all international travelers who visit the country for signs of Ebola virus, irrespective of country of origin.
It is a speculation. For us, it is a routine. Since this case occurred in West Africa, we have put in a system where whenever we hear that a disease can be similar to the Ebola case, the team of the ministry moves very quickly to take sample and start inquiring and sending it to Atlanta or anyway, to make sure. This is the fifth time since the problem occurred in West Africa. So there is no result up to now to say what is going on there. We are still waiting, but there is not yet a report that we have Ebola here in this country. Not at all.
Are you saying the investigation is still continuing to find out what is really happening rather than conclude speculation that
they
it is
Ebola? Yes, the samples are already in the lab. We are waiting the result. That's all.
You said the government has implemented measures as a warning. Take me through the system, early warning system that you talked about.
We have deployed teams in all borders to investigate any person entering the country medically. And we have made here in Kinshasa town, where many people come from abroad, 8 hospitals are ready to receive any case of such. We have equipped them. We have sent in personnel. You know that we have a good experience of this disease that was seen here years and years ago. And I think yesterday or the day before yesterday, we sent our big specialist of this disease, Dr. Muyembe, Professor Muyembe, who went to Liberia to help our brothers of Liberia. So if we will have such case here, Muyembe will come quickly. But now he is in Liberia. So this case of Equator is just inquiring, no matter of panicking.
Is there screening at the airport and the borders, if I may ask you, implemented by the government to ensure that Ebola doesn't come into DRC?
Yes. All airports, international airports, all ports, are now equipped with the material to screen every passenger that has disembarking here in Kinshasa from every country, not only from West Africa.
You talked about one of your experts going to help Liberia. Has any other country, you know, you talked about Guinea, Sierra Leone, Nigeria, and of course Liberia. Has any other country contacted DRC for its expertise to help with this ailment in West Africa?
Is what Liberia did, and it is why our president responded by sending in Professor Muyembe.
Lambert Mende is the Democratic Republic of Congo's information minister. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Kinshasa. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, August 22nd. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. In Liberia's capital, Ebola has captured the airwaves. And we are not just talking about news of the often fatal disease. The hit song Ebola in Town has a danceable beat, as well as carrying a serious message about avoiding infection. But can a song change people's minds and change their behavior? Via Steve Baragona reports.
Back in May, 3 Liberian musicians thought people were not taking the Ebola outbreak seriously enough. People thought it was a government trick to get aid money. The musicians wanted to get people's attention.
Ebola, Ebola, don't touch your friend, don't touch it, no eating something dangerous.
It worked. Just a few days after they recorded it, Ebola in Town was a hit all over Monrovia.
Something dangerous, Ebola.
Musician Samuel Shadow Morgan says they did not want to do the typical awareness song, slow, mellow, and serious. They wanted something people could dance to.
Since everybody want to dance these days, they will first dance to the beat, and the next thing is they will learn the chorus. From the chorus, you start going through the verses and getting the message of what the song is actually about.
The last verse, for example, is about how you can get the disease from eating monkeys and other bushmeat.
If you like that monkey, don't eat that meat. If you like that baboon, I said don't eat that meat. If you like that bato, don't eat that meat. In Bola Inda.
It's very catchy. Can't get it out of my head now.
Jennifer Chu works on social marketing for public health campaigns at Ogilvy Public Relations in Washington. The song is simple, direct, and authentic, she says, and it's rare to find one that's both informative and popular.
Somehow, magically, it's a really catchy song that has a good public health message.
Susan Kren directs the Center for Communication Programs at Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health in Baltimore. She says music can be a powerful tool for delivering a health message.
Because you're out there with something that's already catching people's attention because it's entertainment, half your battle is done.
Kren says the emotional response to a catchy tune helps make delivering the facts easier. She and the center have been doing this kind of work for more than 20 years.
Onyenka actually wrote the lyrics. We briefed them, you know, on what we were looking for in terms of content, what we were trying to achieve with the program. And, you know, they did the music videos and we put them out there and, you know, they were big hits. If you love me,
wait for me. The song was not only popular, it also helped make family planning a topic of conversation with the Nigerian public. But, she adds, it was not just the song that did it.
One song alone isn't necessarily going to make the difference. I would say that the best way to use a song is as part of a broader package.
The package in Nigeria included radio and TV programs, newspaper and magazine articles, and more. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Washington.
Human rights activists say Mali's government continues to jail children accused of having been members of armed rebel and extremist groups and that the government is committing human rights abuses in the north. Katerina Hoje has more for VOA from Bamako.
Amnesty International says some ex-combatants being held in adult prisons in Bamako are as young as 16. Amnesty says its researchers visited some of the children and found they do not have access to lawyers or family visits. One boy has not been allowed outside for exercise or to see his family since he was locked up in late 2013. Amnesty's Mali director, Salum Traore, says the detention of these children violates Mali's international human rights obligations and agreements between the government and the United Nations.
They are victims. They should not be considered as perpetrators. So they should be freed. They should be helped to reinsert them in their local communities.
In March 2012, a group of separatist rebels and Islamist militants took control of much of Mali's north. Scores of children were recruited into the groups as child soldiers. Amnesty says the detention of children accused of having been part of the armed groups is but one of a long list of human rights violations committed in the north since the start of 2012. The violence did not stop once French and African troops retook the north in early 2013. The Bamako government says it has been difficult to access some areas in the north to investigate reports of abuses and to identify those responsible. During a recent two-week visit to Mali, the researchers found evidence of deaths in custody and continuing violence perpetrated against civilians by rebel groups such as National Movement for the Liberation of Azawad. Amnesty says it has documented more than 500 cases of violence in the north since the conflict started in 2012. Despite elections last year, the central government remains weak and unstable. In many parts of the north, there is a non-functioning government, schools remain closed and courts are not functioning. This is Katerina Hoye for VOA in Bamako.
A civil society representative at the South Sudan peace talks in Ethiopia's capital is calling on the Intergovernmental Authority for Development, also known as IGAD, to bring the government back to the negotiating table. As Eskender Feru reports from Addis Ababa, the government delegation boycotted the negotiations for a sixth straight day yesterday, Thursday.
Speaking to reporters on the sidelines of the talks in Addis Ababa, the chairman of the civic society organization's delegation, Alokir Malwal Aguer, said any agreements reached without the participation of the government cannot and will not be implemented.
The ongoing meeting in the Semitic group and the absence of the government in the peace process, we do not believe that this ongoing process will bear tangible results for implementation back in South Sudan.
Malwal says it is IGAD's job to bring back the government to the table.
And given the lack of motion, we view that the stakeholders cannot reach peace if the government is absent from the process, forcing us to consider our participation in the peace process. As we await the returning of the government delegation, we hope that the government will be brought back to the table by the IGAD mediators, just as it was done when the SPLM and opposition boycotted the talks earlier in the closing of the session 4.
Enoch Tombi, the leader of the faith-based organization's delegation at the talks, says IGAD is well aware of the government's position on the talks.
They've expressed their opinion, and all the discussions is taking into account their opinion as a government delegation. But of course, the agreement will not be able to be signed without the government.
It is not clear at this point if the mediators have been in contact with the government delegation this week in efforts to bring them back to the talks. The United States, the African Union, and the United Nations Security Council have been urging both sides to take the talks seriously, agree on a transitional government, and reach a peace deal quickly. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio.
U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder is promising a fair and thorough federal investigation into the shooting death of black teenager Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri, after a day-long trip to the Ambato town. Holder spoke to reporters about his visit to Ferguson in unusually personal terms upon his return to Washington. VOA National Correspondent Jim Malone has more.
That's my grandson.
All right, how you doing? How
That's
old are
grandson.
You?
A day after his visit to Ferguson, Attorney General Holder sought to assure community leaders and citizens that the Justice Department takes its role in the case seriously.
Our investigation will be fair, it will be thorough, and it will be independent.
During his visit, Holder met with law enforcement, community leaders, and the family of Michael Brown, the black teenager who was shot and killed by a white police officer. Holder said he hoped the federal presence and investigation will help Ferguson begin to heal.
There is a real fracture out there now that I think people are really trying to work their way through. And as I indicated to them, I think this is, out of this tragedy comes a great opportunity for reforming that community.
Ferguson has been calmer in recent days, and the involvement of the federal government may be helping, says Howard University expert Greg Carr.
They're sending a message, a very strong message, that they will be watching, that they will be side by side with local government, and that this case must be handled with the greatest care and concern for objectivity, fairness, and justice.
Holder was sent to Ferguson by President Barack Obama with the hope of reassuring the local community. But analyst and author Sam Fullwood says the healing process will take time.
I think it's important that they speak out and that they do it, because it moves us further along the road than it would be if they didn't. But I think there's a totally unrealistic expectation that when the president says something, people automatically salute and things change.
The shooting incident in Ferguson and its violent aftermath have also drawn fresh attention to long-standing, deeper issues of race and class differences in the U.S., says Georgetown University law professor Anthony Cook.
We live in separate worlds. Still, a majority of black and brown kids go to schools that are majority black and brown. When you look at residential areas, even some black middle class neighborhoods, those neighborhoods continue to be predominantly minority.
Moving out. Back up.
In the meantime, international attention remains focused on Ferguson. Michael Brown's funeral is set for Monday in St. Louis. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
It's coming up at 25 minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Owuma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin at the Olympic Youth Games in Nanjing, China. Egypt's Ahmed Sara clinched Africa's first gold medal at the Games on Thursday. She triumphed in girls' 63-kilogram weightlifting contest. Cape Verde Islands thrashed Vanuatu 7-1 in boys' football. Ghana's Kwabena Philip and Nicolas Tete edged Peru's Luis Bramont Arias and Jimmy Herendia 2-1 in boys' beach volleyball. In handball, South Korea beat Angola 39-23 in the girls' contest, while Slovenia outclassed Tunisia 33-12 in the boys' event. In boys' table tennis, Egypt pipped Kazakhstan 2-1 before losing 3-0 to South Korea. In athletics news, Ethiopia's Mukhtar Edris triumphed in 5,000 meters in 12 minutes and 54.83 seconds, the world's fastest time for the event this year, at the IWF Diamond League in Stockholm, Sweden on Thursday. South African Godfrey Kotso-Mokwena won men's long jump. Ethiopian Hiwot Aeleo and Tunisia's Habiba Gribi secured a 1-2 African triumph in women's 3,000 meters steeplechase, while Ethiopian Genzebe Dibaba and Djibouti's Ayanle Suleiman were second in women's 1,500 meters and men's 800 meters, respectively. Turning to football, Rwanda police and Rwanda military side APR face off in the semi-final at the Council of Eastern Central Africa Football Association's Sekafa Kagame Club Championships in Kigali, Rwanda today, Friday. Sudan's El Merrek and Uganda's Kampala City Council Authority clash in the other semi-final. Meanwhile, Sudan's El Hilal host Egypt's Zamalek in Orange Africa Champions League action today, Friday. Tunisia's CS Faxian and Esperance play Algeria's Entente Setif and Libya's El Ahly Benghazi, respectively. In Kinshasa, AS Vita and TP Mazembe clash in a Democratic Republic of Congo derby. Elsewhere, Egypt's El Ahly face Tunisia's Etoile du Sahel in Orange African Confederations Cup action tomorrow, Saturday. Ivory Coast's Sewe Sports and ASEC Mimosa play Zambia's Nkana and Republic of Congo's AC Leopards, respectively, while Mali's Real de Bamako play Cameroon's Cotton Sport. In handball, hosts Uganda and Kenya clash in both the men's and women's finals at the Africa Zone 5 Under-20 Handball Challenge in Mukono near the capital Kampala tomorrow, Saturday. Rwanda play Tanzania and Burundi for the women's and men's bronze medal, respectively. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a fabulous weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good weekend, and we look forward to your report on Monday morning. Our listener mail for this Friday morning comes from William Kokulo of Monrovia, Liberia. He says, "Dear VOA, thank God for the recovery of the two American doctors who contracted the Ebola virus in Liberia. Their recovery was possible largely because the U.S. government showed concern for its citizens. When will African leaders start showing similar love and concern for their citizens? I also hope and pray that Ebola becomes history sooner in the West Africa sub-region." Thank you, William Kokulo of Monrovia, Liberia, for your comment. And please send your viewpoints to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A tense calm was reported Thursday in the West Point area of Liberia's capital, Monrovia, a day after riot police clashed with residents who tried to break a quarantine placed on the area in an attempt to contain the spread of Ebola. At least four people were injured Wednesday when police fired bullets and tear gas to disperse stone-throwing protesters. That's it for this Friday, August 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stradak, as well as sports editor Mark Oman, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Butterson. Have a lovely weekend.
Love African music?
Music time in Africa.
This is Heather Maxwell, and if you do, Music Time in Africa is the perfect show for you. Tune in to listen on the radio Saturdays and Sundays at 0900 2000 and 2100 UTC. You can also listen to the show day or night on the internet. Go to voanews.com and voaafrica.com and click on Music Time in Africa. You'll find past and present radio shows and a link to my blog, African Music Treasures. This is Africa through its own music. Oldies, classics, traditional music, Afropop, and fusion. You get it all right here in one beautiful bundle on VOA's Music Time in Africa.